tone quality and signal strength. And the third one I used to get often, but it's RST. let's see, RST. I gotta think back on that. But I got two of them anyway. Each S unit, by the way, represents a change in the strength of 5 to 6 dB. Which, again, and we can talk about that, of how they derive that. And it's a, again, it's a little bit mathematical, but I'm going to save that maybe for next week. We could talk about signal strength, S meters on, in receivers, and you know, other units that we use for measuring receiver sensitivity. So although most receiver S meters are not accurately calibrated, which is true, it's, keep in mind it's a relative number, it is useful to consider that a change in signal strength of one S unit is a change in signal power of approximately 4. Now, again, you have to take my word what I'm saying, but mathematically I can explain it, but it'll take a little bit of visualization and writing some formulas down to see how that works. So that's the sticking point with this discussion, because to derive that number, a change in power level of 4 will correspond to a change of 1 S unit, which is 6 dB, as mentioned. So, putting that aside, here are some other places you'll find the ubiquitous decibel, okay? Let me let it drop again. Okay, filter bandwidth is the width of the frequency range over what signals are attenuated less than 3 dB, or where the filter output is no less than half of the input power. And that's another interesting point, because 3 dB, and again, we have to refer to some mathematics to figure out how you get 3 dB. 3 dB is your half power point. In mathematics, it corresponds exactly when you do the math. So if you increase your power, if you double your power, you will increase it by 3 dB. If you halve your power, you'll decrease it by 3 dB. So, and the dB scale runs positive and negative. You're going to have positive dB or negative dB. So, that explains that, basically. Again, without going into all the details. Feed line loss is specified in decibels per some length. 100, like, as an example, 100 feet of 100 meters is common at a particular frequency. So you're talking about coax cable, you've heard the specification, how many dB per feet, 100 feet, 200 feet, 1,000 feet, and so on. So that's also calculated and measured of the attenuation of the coax cable over a certain length. Antenna gain at a given is also given in decibels, usually compared to an isotropic or dipole antenna. Now again, now an isotropic is like a fictitious antenna, if I can say it, which radiates in all directions equally, and it's used as a standard reference point as an isotropic, as opposed to a dipole. Now, I don't know what the gain is of an isotropic. I know what it over a dipole. A dipole being a dipole, and given that figure eight pattern where the lobes are broadside to the length of the dipole, a dipole in free space has a particular gain of 2.1 decibels, you know, which is a standard that we use. Let me let it drop. So again, there's your dBs, you know, in the measurement that we're using. It's 2.1 dB over isotropic. So we're now comparing a dipole, again, to an isotropic antenna. And it turns out that if you look at the engineering books on antennas, you'll see it's approximately 2.1 decibels of gain of what a dipole gives. The last thing it mentions is power amplifier and preamplifier gain is usually given in dB. So, again, you have a preamp that gives 10 dB gain, 20 dB gain, 30 dB gain, and so on. Power amplifiers also give gain. And they can also give losses if they're defective. So, there you go. There's some examples where dBs are used outside of S meters and receiver sensitivity and so on. All right, up to this point, any questions? WA2CDL. Okay, I'm going to go into the 5 decibel basics. And then there's an article, paragraph here on how to calculate decibels, which again, I'll read it, and if anyone doesn't understand it, we'll go into that next week. We'll talk about the math a little bit because it goes into logarithms and how it's derived. But these are the basic factors of decibels, and there's 5 listed here. Number 1, the decibel is a ratio of 2 power values. It is computed using logarithms, so very large and small ratios result in numbers that are easy to work with. By the way, keep in mind it's of 2 power values. And we're talking about power as opposed to voltage, which we'll get into maybe later on, next week. Talking about power ratios or voltage ratios, because there is a difference in the dB formula. So just keep that in mind. A positive decibel value indicates a ratio greater than 1, and a negative decibel value indicates a ratio of less than 1. 0 decibels indicates a ratio of exactly 1. And there's a table, which I'm looking at, for a list of easily remembered decibel values of common ratios. Now, of course, if you want to look any of this up, you can Google it, and power ratios of the decibel values in dB and voltage ratios, and you'll see what it is according to this table that's given. Okay, so this is number 3. A letter following dB, such as dBm, as Roy mentioned previously, indicates a specific reference value, and there's a table for that. There are decibels that's referenced through abbreviations. Let me let it drop again. Okay, so we have dBm, we have dBw, we have dBv, we have dB microvolts, which is UV, that's U is the micro, dBi, that's your isotropic antenna, as I mentioned. DBD, which is your dipole gain. That's reference to a dipole. That's your maximum gain to a half-wave dipole. And you got DBFS, which is full-scale value, which we don't use that often. And DBC, that's another one. That's carrier power. And that's used in a measurement of a receiver performance. You want to know how many dB down from the carrier a signal is. Let's say a harmonic of a signal. How many dB down that harmonic is from the carrier power. And it's also used in specifications for signal generators on their spectral purity. Because the signal generators, you know, will generate a signal, but you want to make sure that their spectral purity is so many dB down from the main carrier that you're generating. So that's where your dBc comes in. All right, let me let it drop.
KD2FIU.
Okay, George, go ahead.
Yes, in dB measurements, have you come across a dBRNC0?
Yes, actually, yes. And that's used in telephone systems, in microwaves especially. We call it the Brinko, and that's exactly right. dBRNC, there is a meter that actually measures that. I've used it many, many years ago when one of my jobs, when we did some microwave work. And I actually forget the reference point on that. It's specified, but that's true. And it's used in telephone systems and in microwaves. Good point. Back to you.
Yeah, that's the acoustical dB in reference to a corrected power signal of 0. dB reference correction power level 0. And yes, that was used in transmission systems over microwave and also power lines that were of very, very low DC power over the years. And this is very interesting, Andy. Thank you. I'm sorry. I just wanted to bring that in, that there is the acoustic and power level relationship measurement that exists. Although dBs can be acoustic only, can be power only, there is also tables that put them together.
Yeah, by the way, a TIM set, which is a transmission impairment testing set, which I happen to have, has a DeBrinco scale on it. And it's used to measure, again, as you mentioned, it's on a measure of phone line level. This article here does not refer to any phone line specifications, but a phone line does have a dB number attached to it, and that's a good point to mention, because phone lines don't use 50-ohm systems because it's not RF. It's an audio over a twisted pair, and that's usually a 600-ohm line. So the reference for 600 ohms happens to be on a phone line 0.775 volts, 775 millivolts for 0 dB. 0 dBm on a 600 ohm line. And I just happen to know that, and you know it too, because I've worked with those. I've worked with phone lines quite a bit. But this article, and these articles referring to in the amateur service, is referenced to 50 ohms. So that's why I'm mentioning using the 50 ohm system. But when you measure line loss, yes, we do that with a TIM set to measure phone line loss. So thank you for bringing that up. That's very good. Any other questions? WA2CDO. Okay. Moving on. So system gain in dB equals gain 1 plus gain 2 plus gain up to as many gains as you want. Gain to the nth power. Gain n. So you could just add. Because I left out a paragraph. Let me go back to paragraph 4. If given in dB, the gains or losses of a series of stages in a radio communication system can be added together, and that's what I just said. So the system gain is gain 1 plus gain 2 or gain 3 and so on, up to as many gains as you want. So, they're just additive. The dB level is just additive over as much gain as you have, as many stages as you have. Okay, so that's number 4. And the last basic, 5 decibel basics, losses and attenuation are equivalent to negative values of gain. And that could be a little bit confusing. In other words, a loss of 3 dB is equivalent to a gain of minus 3 dB. And a 10 dB, and 10 dB of attenuation is equivalent to a gain of minus 10 dB. So if you have a minus sign in front of it, okay, that's a loss or an attenuated signal. So your 3 dB down will be minus 3, plus 3, if there's no sign in front of it, no plus sign, usually there's no plus, it's only minus, will show you a positive gain as opposed to a negative gain. Negative gain would be a loss by 3 dB, 10 dB, 20 dB or what have you. So those are the five decibel bases. Any questions up to this point? WA2CDO.
Yeah, Andy, I find the easiest way to explain losses is just the inverse. So although 3 decibels is a factor of 2, minus 3 would be inverted, so it's 1 over 2, or 1 half. And the same with 10 decibels, minus 10 decibels is equal to a factor of 10, but because it's minus, it's 1 tenth. So that's the way I like to describe losses as opposed to gains that decibels are capable of noting.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. You know, every engineer, if you work with decibels a lot, you know, which I do, you know, incorporates a standard for what's comfortable and what you're used to seeing and used to using. So you could do it that way. You can different ways of looking at it. The way I just described it is the way that the book just says it, and you know, your way is good also. It's very good. Any other comments or questions regarding up to this point? Okay, we're muddling through this together here, and we got a couple of pages here. Actually, two and a half pages left. As I said, I'm going to try to break this down into two parts, staying away from some of the math. So up to this point, for some reason they go into. Okay, let me just let me go back for a second. All right, so we're gonna just talk a little bit about how to calculate decibels. And again, you know, I'm not going into all the math and having visualize what's going on here. But I'll just read it, and then we can just we can sort it out. And Roy can help out also in sorting this out the way they word it. Sometimes I don't like the way they word the things in some of these articles because it could be confusing. Sometimes you have to see it on paper. And I'm not looking for people to write things down unless you want to. So how to calculate decibels? The log, now we're dealing with log rhythmic numbers now, so you got to keep that in mind. The log of a number, in short, let me start over. The log of a number is short for logarithm and is the answer to the question. And here's the question. To what value does the logarithm's base value need to be raised in order to equal the number in question? So that's why this could be a little bit confusing. So I'm just going to repeat that. The question is, to what value does the logarithm's base value need to be raised in order to equal the number in question? Okay, so that's the question that's asked. When calculating decibels, we use what we know as the common log. There are two types of logarithms. There's a common log and there's a natural log. Decibels work only in the common log base. Okay, and the common log base is base 10, as opposed to a natural log. So when calculating decibels, we use the common logarithm, written as log with its base value of 10. They just have a footnote here. The natural log, written, and it's written as an expression for it, uses a base value of E, which is actually 2.71828, which we're not going to go into that. We're not going to be talking about natural logs. This is only in the common log. So if I lost everyone just by making...
Repeater, timeout. Peter, timeout. Cancel.
Okay, I'm back. I unkeyed. I hope I didn't lose anyone by making that statement that was just written. No, put that question. So, if anybody has any questions regarding that, you can ask, and even and Roy can help clarify that, because I don't like the way some things are worded anyway. Any questions? WHA Studio.
Yeah, Andy. Let me see if I have it. Okay, I seem to have it. 2.718, it goes on and on and on. It's like pi. It's a transcendental number. It's called actually Euler's number. That's the basis for the natural logarithmic scale. I just wanted to add that little bit of trivia.
Okay, very good, Roy. Thanks. Maybe in the next segment of this discussion, we could talk about a little bit about natural logarithms, and we can all learn about something new. So, very good. Thanks. Okay, so getting back to this, if there's no questions, hopefully I didn't put anybody to sleep. Here's an example. If the number in question is 100, okay, and the base value of 10 would have to be raised for the power, or raised to the power of 2 to equal 100. Now, and that's, again, it's a little bit confusing the way it's worded. In other words, 10 squared is 100. It's the square or the exponent, which is the log of the number. So what I remember, which is very easy, if people don't know this, the log of 100 is 2. And it's always 2. The log of 10 in base 10 is 1. The log of 1,000 is 3. The log of 10,000 is 4, and so on and so forth. So any number in between would be a fraction of that number. So if you want to get the log, and there's a log table that you got to use to look it up. You can't memorize all the numbers between 1 and 100 and get the log value. But you need that number in the formula for calculating the dB loss or gain in the formula that's used. So to continue, for example, let me just see, the base value of 10 minus 3 raised to the power equal 100. In other words, 10 squared is 100. Thus, the common log of 100 is 2, as I just mentioned. Similarly, the log of 1,000, or 10 times 10 times 10, which is the exponent, would be 10 times 10 times 10, would be 10 cubed, and the cubed is 3. That's the log. So, and here's another one, the log of 1/10 equals the same thing as the log of 10 to the minus 1. So, and that, again, you got to visualize that to understand it. For all decimal calculations, okay, use the common logarithm. So the common log is always used. Getting the ratio of two power values, the actual formula in dB, if you want to find the dB loss or gain, it's 10 times the log of whatever power that you're looking at.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Okay, let me see if I got it back to the CDM. All right, so, as I just started to say, the three formulas. Actually, we use two. I don't use current that often, but you can use it. Finding the dB gain or loss of two ratios. Two numbers that in the ratio. It's the power divided by the reference power, and you take the log of that and multiply it by 10 times 10, and that's the actual formula for calculating a dB, dB gain, dB loss. The same thing applies to voltage, only instead of multiplying it by 10, you're now multiplying it by 20, and there's an explanation for that, again, a little bit mathematical, which we can go into next week. Talk about that, of why that happens. Same thing for current. current and voltage will have a dB value 20 times the log. It's it'll be the power number that you're looking for if you want to measure power, which will be 10 times the log. So, you know, again, if anybody wants to know further about that, we can talk about that next week. Oh, with that in mind, without getting too deep into the mat, any questions? W8CDO.
Andy, I just want to point out to people that straight logarithms are really easy to understand if you think of them as units called bells, which was the original unit. Because bells was not a good number to scale things at, people scaled them back to tenths of a bell or the decibel. So that's where the number 10 kind of comes in. It's cutting the number of the occurring logarithm by 10. So it's because the decibels are one-tenth of a bell.
Yeah, you know, somewhere, and I read this, exactly what you're saying, it actually mentions Alexander Graham Bell, because this is why it's called bells in the first place, but I didn't get to that paragraph yet. I'm looking now to see where it is, because it does state that. As far as, I don't know where I read it. I have to look at this more closely. But I did read that, yes. Because deci is a tenth of a bell. That's why they call it decibels. I think even Dick mentioned that a few times. So it's a tenth of a bell, because they use bells, but it's a too larger word, too larger a unit, I should say, as a bell. So they went to deci. I guess there's centi. Well, centi is 1,000. You could have centi bells, but never heard of that one, but I guess it could be. All right. So you got the three formulas for power and voltage and current, which is 20 or 10 times the log of the ratio of input power to output power, giving it either a loss or a gain, because you can have a gain or a loss, as I mentioned earlier. So, all right, continuing on to another paragraph here, and let's see, it's already 9:30, so I may cut this short and then continue this next week, because we do go into some voltage and current ratios, which again is mathematical, so not to confuse anyone. Maybe we'll take a little bite-sized piece out of this. But adding decibels together, another useful characteristic of decibels is that gains and losses of stages in a radio system can be added together if they are specified in decibels. For example, if you have an antenna, and this is important, if you have an antenna with an 8 dB of gain connected to a preamplifier with 15 dB of gain, the total gain is simply 8 plus 15. You now have a system gain of 23 dB. Similarly, if a power amplifier with 12 dB of gain is connected to a feed line with 1 dB of loss, and then to an antenna with 4 dB of gain, now what you got? The total gain of that combination is 12, because you got 12 dB of gain, and you got 1 dB of loss, so 12 minus 1 is 11, but you got 4 dB of antenna gain. So you got 11 plus 4, which is a total number of 15.
Repeater, timeout.
Okay,
repeater, timeout, cancel.
Okay, nobody lost anything because I unkeyed. Talking too long. So, given the numbers I just gave you guys, losses are treated as negative gains. And that statement could be confusing. You know, losses are treated as negative gain. How do you have a negative gain? Well, it's the way it's stated. Because because there's a negative sign, because you have 1 dB of loss. on a piece of coax cable, so it's minus one. They put a negative sign in front of it, showing that you actually have a loss, not a gain. All right, so that's how you add decibels together. The next simple paragraph, and I think we're going to end it here because now it'll get a little bit more complicated as we go into voltage and current ratios and how they're derived, and then there's some examples of how that's used. But I don't want to confuse anyone. And then there's converting decibels and percentage. So there's percentages. And then there's using the calculator and figuring all this out. But this whole discussion is basically to give an overview of what decibels are, and where they're used, and how they're used, and what it is. So that's the whole point of this discussion. Hopefully everyone is understanding that point. So keep that in mind. So the last thing I'll mention now is converting decibels to power ratios. So if you are given a ratio in decibels and asked to calculate the power or voltage gain, here are the formulas to use. And there's two formulas. It's basically the power ratio is the log to the minus one of in dB, whatever dB is, over 10. And so that's the power, and of course the voltage ratio will be the same over, but it'll be dB over 20. So, and it could be written, you could rewrite it as the power ratio is 10 to the dB divided by 10, and voltage or current ratio is 10 to the dB divided by 20. So again, we'll get into the discussion why they're using 10 and 20, and that has to do with basically the power formula, because there's a square. If you want to measure power equals basically from Ohm's law, E times I, but I equals E squared over R, so it's the square of the voltage. Because of that square is why you have a 20.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Okay, sorry about the timeout. So basically, what I'm saying is that square is the reason. But it's possible that Roy can explain it a little bit better than I can. I understand it, but sometimes it's hard to explain. I think at this point, Roy, we'll end it. If anybody doesn't have any questions regarding what's up to this point, and then we can continue this next week because it gets a little bit more involved. And as I mentioned, you know, dBs are used, you know, in many different applications as was pointed out. I'm looking over something as I'm talking. That's why I'm hesitating a little bit. So there's a lot of applications for this, and we can discuss that. So Roy, I'll give it back to you, and we can continue this next week if there's no questions. AC2, thanks for letting me in. AC2GS, W8CDL.
K2MDB with a comment.
I think Andy's Corner is a valuable asset for the TechNet. And decibels are an important thing to know about. A surprising number of amateur radio operators tend to forget over time exactly what they mean. When Andy was discussing the difference between power ratios and voltage ratios, because of the way Ohm's law works, power is proportional to the square of voltage. And when you square something with logarithms, it's the same as multiplying the logarithm by a factor of two. So you're multiplying by 10 because you're using decibels instead of bells. And now in the case of the voltage scaling factor, the ratio of the two voltages, because you have to square it to be proportional to the power, that's why it's 2 times 10 or 20 times the logarithm of the difference between the voltages. And so that, in a nutshell, is that about decibels. Again, if anyone's interested, if you go to my link page, roy.ac2gs.com, there is a little article on decibels that I wrote a few years ago for the e-log. And there's also a very fascinating website I found that goes into some details of how signal level meters work. So please avail yourself of that after the technical net. And Andy, as always, I thank you profusely for your participation here. If anyone has any other questions on the subject of decibels and they would like to ask them now, they are free to do that.
Quick question. W2MHL, Bob?
Yes, Bob.
Can you give me the frequency of the repeater?
Yes, the repeater is 146.850. That's one of our two repeaters. That's the Glen Oaks repeater that I'm operating on. We have a link to another repeater in Plainview.
There was one out of here in Selden or something.
Yeah, that's the other one. Does anyone have the frequency for Selden? I don't have it readily available since I don't use it.
147.375. Thank you so much, whoever that was.
That was Ed, K2GJE.
K2NBB with a comment.
Yes, Bob.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that the article Andy's reading from is in the January 2020 issue of QST, if anyone wants to look at it. If you want to get really anal about it, it's on page 34. I just looked in the contents. So, of course, online or on their magazines at home. So I just thought I'd throw that in. Back to Ned.
Okay, thank you very much, Bob. Yes, and any of you with an ARRL membership have access to the entirety of QSTs going back, although the older ones are just photocopies and some of them are not the finest rendition of those pages, but still, it's nice to have that open to you. And the last few years are beautifully constructed electronically, so no problem with your eyeballs. And I would suggest that you look it up if you're an ARRL member. If not, once again, I have a link to my own article that has illustrations that show the difference between a linear graph and a logarithmic graph. So hopefully we'll give people a better idea of how you can squeeze together more information in a smaller, more self-contained mode using logarithms as opposed to linear. And as many of us know, potentiometers come in both a linear contour and a logarithmic contour because they are very useful for audio amplifiers since audio signals are perceived by us in a logarithmic scale. So some things to keep in mind. Logarithms are with us all about us, and sometimes we don't notice that. So thank you very much, Bob. Any other questions? If not, I actually have a mailbag question, but if anyone has any other questions, any topics or either decibels or anything else that they would like to mention before the TechNet is over, please give me your first name and your call sign.
Antoshian.
Yes, Wesley.
Maybe not today, because you are rushing to the mail. I suggest to discuss amplifiers using NMR. They are broadband amplifiers from, let's say, 5 kilohertz to 200 megahertz or 1 megahertz to 600 megahertz. And they are 200-300 watts. The less you can find, less in power, but let me drop. Yeah, because high-resolution NMR spectroscopy is a tool for non-destructive structural investigation of the matter, they require a wide bands of the frequencies. So I was thinking that because those amplifiers are class A, AB, and B amplifiers are quite interesting stuff. They are quite inexpensive because people don't know that they could use it for ham radio operation. However, there is a problem. And the problem is that usually, I mean, I have few of them right now. They usually are made to be driven by milliwatts or fraction of that. So let's say I have one that is 300 watts working from 5 kilohertz to 220 megahertz, but the driving power is approximately 0 to 35 milliwatts. But when I took it apart and I found out inside that if I disconnect preamp, which is a separate box of it, then I could use that for, let's say, 144 megahertz, I mean, 200 meters, a, I mean, 2 meters band, I'm sorry, 2 meters band, or the other one that I have, I could use possibly up to 1.2 gigahertz. The only problem is that driving must be lower. So you cannot go with 500 watts on 1.2 gigahertz on the ham radio band. Actually, I don't remember. What is the allowed power on 1.2, Dr. Wright?
Ah, that's a good question. Offhand, I don't remember. Anyone out there in the audience, they must know.
So, for those guys who sometimes have a problem to connect to the repeater, or for those who have a problem to fight with interference or nuisance, it's elite. NMR amplifiers. Plenty of them is lying around. Nobody wants them. And not many people want them. And nobody knows that they could be used. And to Xia, back to you.
Okay, Wesley, that's interesting. My gut sense would be that if you increase the gain, one of the reasons why there's such a headroom for gain is that for NMR purposes, you want an extremely linear amplifier. And that's not impossible if you're running it Class A, but it's a very inefficient mode. I would worry that if you raise the gain above the specs, you might introduce a degree of non-linearity that would be very problematic for things like single sideband.
Right. The only thing is that they are modular in nature. The one that I've got, actually I didn't want to buy it. It was made in 1991. At that time it cost around $72,000 at that time. And it is two-bander NMR amplifier, which is 300 watts from 5 to 222 megahertz, and the other band is 50 watts from 200 to 600 megahertz in one box. So I was cruising around, and all of a sudden I've got an offer, $100. So I said, okay, because the guy I wanted for $230 for shipping, I said, let me give him an offer for $50. And he accepted. So we're talking about $70,000 for $50. Absolutely looking like yesterday was released from manufacturer, and it's great, and it's absolutely amazing. And to let me jump. Because I was dealing with many of different amplifiers before, wideband amplifiers, usually class A or class B. Then I knew that maximum 1 volt is that what I can give from the signal generator. But then I've noticed that one more thing. Those amplifiers are impossible to be broken. I mean, everything could be broken, but if you break this, you've got to be done. So that means the protective circuitry is done this way that no matter what you do, it's going to tell you. So if you put more power on than is required from driving power, it's going to tell you, or it's going to show you the LED, which says reduce the power. And then I have one of the amplifiers that says reduce the power. So I reduce the power to 0.35. I mean, that would be 35 millivolts, right? 0.0.35, right? And then it starts to react properly. If you have a load disconnected, you're not going to break it. It's simply going to be overload, and then you have to switch it off and switch it on, and it's working. And then I noticed those two boxes. So I follow the wire from the BNC connector to the first box, and the first box was small box. It was the preamplifier. And then it was connected, the output of that was connected to the amplifier. So the amplifier probably is still, I didn't get to that yet, but probably from 3 to 5 watts. And that would be good for ham radio operation. So I was thinking that if I have a problem with somebody just trying to not be so nice, I can put it on 2 meters. And to XGN, thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome, Wesley. I didn't receive emails to that effect. I've been looking through my directory and elsewhere, and I can't seem to find it. So it didn't land in any of my usual mailboxes, but sounds like you have a very interesting, somewhat expensive original price object. And so I hope you enjoy it. At one point or another, I also decided to get an overthruster, I lovingly call it. It's an RM Italy LA250. It's supposed to output something like in excess of 200 watts. I've never really squeezed more than about 185 watts out of it without an alarm going off someplace in it. And I use it sparingly when I need to get my point across the radio waves.
VDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
Yeah, just one comment about these types of amplifiers, because I've also seen these relatively high-power Class A amplifiers that they make available for general testing at companies. The only thing to be careful about them is to remember that the output is untuned. Even though it's designed to match into 50 ohms, the output is untuned. So if any harmonics are developed in them, if there's any harmonic content developed in there, you can put harmonics on the air, which is double plus ungood, as they say in Newspeak. So you have to be careful as far as remembering that the output is not tuned. Go ahead.
I have an answer for that.
Sure, Wesley.
Indeed, I must agree. it could go quite wide. But when you connect the frequency counter to it, it shows you one frequency on it, so it's dominating frequency. When you go with the spectrum analyzer, it shows you six or seven different frequencies, harmonics that it shows on it. But the good thing is, this thing is not made for 50 ohm. And this is a good thing. It's not a bad thing, it's a good thing. Ladies and gentlemen. This thing is made from 10 ohm to 600 ohms. So, all you need then is to have a transmatch at the end of it. Now you tune it to the particular frequency. Think of it like you have a ready-to-use, quite heavy, but extremely well-made piece of gear that will never fail you, and you have to adopt it to ham radio operation. And because people don't know about it, they spend... Look at Henry. $10,000. When my friend John, KC2WGB, passed, he had one. And I've checked it at that time on eBay. It was $8,000 sold. $10,000 was asking price. Now, for $50, for $100, for $200, there are plenty of that stuff people don't know how to use. Of course, you can find the price for $20,000 for the same one, exactly the same model. And you can find a price for $100 for the same model. Only it is that you have to look for it. So, look at it that you have any amplifier at all, and you have to adapt it. What do you need? Tuning circuit at the end of it? And then you amplify, you actually are directing the one particular frequency. And another thing. Because your rig is made to work properly, if you have a QRP, what is it, DSO, that small one, portable one, it gives you quite clean signal. How much of harmonics do you have to be amplified? Who is disagreeing with me? Enter
here. Oh, comment?
Yes, John.
Yeah, well, that's true. The thing you have to be careful of is that you don't get any harmonics generated in it. What can be done? Because we have a couple of these amplifiers up at the school there. They're extremely broadband. They'll go from about 100 kilohertz up to, I think, 250 megahertz, and they're rated at like about 100-150 watts. They're Class A, and they have a nice output circuitry, but it's completely untuned. If I was going to use one of these on one of the amateur bands, what I think I would do is just put in a tuned circuit there that would just match, say, 50 ohms to 50 ohms. I don't have to do any impedance matching, but I would want something tuned in there to reject any harmonics that might be produced, so I don't get any pink slips from the FCC saying I'm putting out some harmonic content. But it is nice that it does have a very broadband capability. Go ahead.
One more thing. Think about it this way. You have a nice lab base generator, or you have just a low power, 3 to 5 watts ham radio rig that gives you a clean signal. And then at the end of it, you're putting the transmatch antenna tuner. If you look at the antenna tuner at its primitive version, before it was automatic, you had pi filter. you had capacitor, coil, and a capacitor. Now, if you want to put any additional filter in series, which would be capacitor and a coil, the series circuit works this way, that it allows only the frequency of resonance to go through, and all of the other frequencies are cut. And the best thing is that your NMR amplifier doesn't have to be tuned, because the broadband is made to work from the 10 ohms to 600 ohms, and you don't have to do anything with it. It is what you put after it just to make that signal clean. But yes, I do agree that people who have an access to that, they got a good thing. And to exchange.
Limark TechNet tonight at 8 o'clock. This is the W2VL repeater.
Okay, our repeater told its identity to us all. It's an interesting, fascinating type of gear. Most people don't have access to it. You're a sharp shopper, and you picked it up. It requires, though, you know, all things require responsible use, and you're responsible, I realize. Also, you got to keep in mind the FCC has this weird rule that they don't want any amplification, any device that's capable of amplifying greater than 15 decibels of gain, because it might be counted as an experimental piece of equipment. You might get around it. As a commercial piece of equipment, you could never sell it, although, you know, no one would be willing to buy $50,000 worth of a broadband amplifier. But interesting, nevertheless.
And I think it's up to you. If in next week or a few weeks from now, you think that NMR would be interesting to discuss, that would be great too. But that is probably for the science question. Our science subject. And to XGN.
Yeah, nuclear magnetic resonance, which is basically the same thing as your doctor's magnetic resonance imaging technology, is an interesting subject for the science portion. Not really amateur radio, but the science portion. We've kind of talked about it before, precession. Spins and all kinds of fun things. We can revisit it somewhere down the road.
You probably know, but it's interesting in that why those amplifiers are so wide. So wide frequency. You have an NMR 600 megahertz. You have a 300 megahertz. You have a 60 megahertz, you have in kilohertz, and the early one that I have, still a few pieces of it, was at frequency of 60 hertz. And then when you look at different specimens that are subject of being of investigation, with use of NMR, they actually process at different frequencies. Now what you need is you're looking for that particular very, 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 very tiny, very small signal. And then you have XYZ channels, and then you're trying to find out what is the difference of it. So actually NMR symmetry has proven many years ago its useful ...ness as a tool for fluid dynamic investigations. And there are plenty of approaches to make it better. But now you have a plenty of junk that people could use. And if you have an amplifier that goes from a few hundred hertz or few kilohertz to 220 megahertz, now think that you have all of the five bands. And you think this is only